it is August, Trevor, and it's Welcome to Two Peas in a Podcast. This is Michelle.
And this is Trevor, and it's actually been quite a interrupted period because of the COVID, really, hasn't it? We've both been isolated.
I did 2 weeks quarantine, and you would have thought that meant that my garden now looks fabulous. It does not. It rained the entire time. It was freezing cold. I still worked from home and I attempted to do things like phone calls and the like in the backyard, but it was actually so cold I couldn't even do that. So the one nice thing, though, I guess, was looking out the window. And actually, I must tell you a story about all that rain. I went to my mum's house and, as you know, she's putting in a new garden in her grey commune, or as she keeps telling me to not call it the grey commune, but that's what it is, Trevor. You know, some people call it lifestyle village.
It's all the go.
But she's putting in this lovely new garden and she's put in lots of Indigenous plants. She's not normally had lots of those. But I popped in last weekend and she was saying what's been really interesting is that ordinarily, even after a few days' rain, the tableland's still quite dry after, you know, when you dig the trowel in. And she was saying this time she's really noticed that really wonderful soaking of a very wet winter, which is fantastic because that's... In Australia, there's no such thing as too much rain.
No, well, my tank's almost full. And if someone asks me next year, what was it like in August of 21, I won't know. But in fact, it's very damp and it's been a lot of rain and it's quite nice, really. I mean, it has been cold. What I've been doing in my isolation, because my wife came back from Alice Springs and everyone thought they might have been contaminated. That was 2 weeks, ridiculousness.
Yeah.
And then I caught I had what they called symptoms. So I went and got that checked, and that too proved to be negative, so I'm okay, but I've had time to think about this broadcast because, in fact, we've been so delayed that now I'm probably much behind.
I think we might be. It's all been very odd, isn't it?
What I did, I went back over some of our old podcasts, the first ones, and it did occur to me that we told people to start their garden, you know. We taught this is why you'd want a garden. That was mostly about nature. And then we said, now what you do is get some tools and you plant it. Well, a lot of people would not have been successful because that, like us, they get other things intruding upon their really good intention to build a garden, you know. And gardening is a time thing. You know?
It is
a method thing, it is a knowledge thing, but it's also you must have the time to do it.
And I think too, take your small victories. I think the thing that people can get a little bit caught up in is I'm putting in this garden and everything has to work. And gardening's not like that. And sometimes one year you can have the most fabulous coriander crop you've ever imagined, you know, which coriander, that's that one herb that you love or you hate. I love it, but I know your wife hates it. I mean, the next year you do all the exact same things and it doesn't work. So
that's the message, in that if you did fail, I doubt that you would have failed with herbs, but there's a lot of ways to fail in gardening. You can sometimes plant too many or too few, which isn't your fault, but you didn't know, so this is all a matter of experience. And well, having just watched the Olympics too, you got to say that those people who are in the Olympics, they have repeated the same action over and over a million times in order to get it right. So that's why we're calling this the better, best second time around, because we would like you, if you failed, to start again. The principles that we told you about, which were about the soil, you've got to improve the soil, and if you've done them, your soil will be slightly better and now you can make it better again.
Well, I think a lot of the reason my soil ended up a lot better was because of all the unsuccessful plants I had that decomposed back into the earth. And I remember thinking, at least it's compost. This is a good thing, you know. Yeah. Or each time the blinkered chooks escaped and I think, at least they're pooping everywhere. This is something, you know, something to sort of look at. But no, you're right, that soil. And sometimes if you've really not had a spectacularly successful start, people can find making the soil good a little bit boring. But when you're a really good gardener, you realise that actually that's the fun part. That's where you need to be.
Yeah, well, I got good compost this year. And it is from experience. But when you think of compost, the homemade compost is alive. Stuff you buy has to be killed off. But
yeah,
when you get your homemade compost, it has millions of micro microorganisms. And so it is really full of life. And so that is what you're after. You're after breeding life into the garden, because from that sort of life comes the other sort of life, which is the vegetable life. And we've actually diverged a bit over the years, and we've gone into flowers as well. And I'm beginning to see that flowers do have their part in it. A bit slow of me to do that, but I'm beginning to.
Well, for someone who is very slow to take up flowers, your garden is just fantastic. As per usual, you've just kind of been like, right, I'm taking this on board. It's fantastic.
Yeah, well, I'm learning the names. And weirdly, with flowers, there's so many of them, they all look so much the same, you know, that it's a matter of learning the names. So now I know a marigold from a pansy sort of thing. But the second principle after the getting your soil good, because you need to add as much compost and manure and organic matter as you can, but after getting that right, don't forget to look where the sun is at midday, because a lot of people do, and a lot of things don't grow in 100% shade, you know, because they actually need to photosynthesize. That's the reason.
Including
they show
humans. Humans don't grow at 100%. Take it from someone who spent 2 weeks in quarantine and couldn't go outside hardly. We do not grow in 100% shade.
And we don't grow either if we're waterlogged. So look at drainage. These are things we have told you, but we're just saying that if you're going to be a serious gardener, and some people won't be, but a lot will be, you need to take those three big things. The drainage, the sun, and the soil need to be as good as you can make them.
Absolutely.
After that, the next most important thing is you, and it's a matter of mental health, really. You want to be there, you want to be enjoying the birds, you want to be enjoying the insects, you want to be enjoying the flowers. And so design a seating position where you can see your garden, because it's often the thing you feel most like doing, you know, rather than working hard at it.
I think the thing that inspires me sometimes is on a Saturday, I think if I get stuck into the garden at about, you know, 4 o'clock, I'll just go wash my hands, pour a glass of wine and sit and enjoy the fruits of my labour. And then often, though, you sit there and you think, oh, just do that one extra little thing. But I agree, that can be a real incentive. Don't forget to enjoy
it. Is
your
good
garden
for your health. If you're sitting reading a book in the sun, that's almost as good as eating a fresh cabbage, you know, because for your physical and mental health, that is very important. And all these things around you, you know, these ducks that you love, and
I love my ducks.
You know, the chooks that I love, and all the wild birds, lizards, and stuff that you see there, they're all reminding you that there's other life on the planet. And as we go into these sort of, well, really quite hectic times, if you listen to the news of late, you know, if you haven't got bloody floods and bomb and bushfires, you've got pandemic and war. I mean, it's not a good time. So you do definitely need your garden as some place where you can retreat to.
Take your shoes off as well. Take your shoes off and just stand, you know, not in a stinging nettle patch, obviously, but just stand on the soil and just feel that kind of, we're like giant solar panels, aren't we? You know, the sun on our heads, but also just standing there barefoot in the garden just for that brief moment. You know, don't be like me and garden barefoot and end up with a broken toe because you've dropped a spade through it, but just really connect to it and you'll feel the energy.
Yeah, I do think that the garden is successful as an escape.
Absolutely.
You know, so, and don't worry too much about TV gardens. TV gardens are opposed. They've all been fixed up by millions of volunteers in order for the camera to get a perfect shot. The average garden is not like that. The average garden this time of year, which is spring, and you can plant everything this time of spring, so already your mind is beginning to turn over like a fast-moving clock. But before you got going, so did the weeds.
Absolutely.
So the weeds are absolutely everywhere, and it's normal for you to look at a garden that's full of weeds. They're not all TV gardens, you know. And so I think you can still relax. You need to do a bit of work, yes, but the weeds do provide you with that compost.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the mulch and so forth. So,
and don't pull up your weeds until you've got something to plant in that spot. If you desperately need to clear the stinging nettle, which I think is sacrilege, because I think stinging nettle is still hands down one of my favourite, most versatile plants. But if you desperately want to clear the stinging nettle, what are you going to replace it with? Or are you going to mulch that soil really heavily? You know, don't leave it sitting there bare.
It's true. This is the one time of year where we're not advising you too late this time, because now you can plant everything.
Yep.
If your mind's spinning around saying, what's everything? Well, just remember before we did a program on the Mediterranean, which are the tomato-related capsicums, eggplants, zucchini, cucumbers, all that sort of thing. So there are the Mediterranean group and there are the three sisters, the corn, the melons and the beans. So they're your two groupings. They will remind you of all the rest, because you can plant anything. You can plant anything now. So clear that patch up. But like Michelle says, clear a patch, plant it. That's probably the smartest thing to do. Clear, fertilise, plant. And you can go right throughout your whole garden one at a time. You've got heaps of time now. You're in plenty of time. You're not in a rush, because certain things like cucumbers get hit by mites and so forth. So if you plant them too early, you might have to plant them a second time. So keep some seed. And also you're growing things inside at present, in hothouses and in your little cloches and mini hothouses. You're growing a lot of stuff inside, tomatoes in particular, because everyone needs more tomatoes than they can possibly eat in summertime.
For some reason, what is that? You plant 40 tomato plants and you go, there's one person, you know. But there's nothing like picking a tomato, you know. I mean, even my rocket's gone to seed, but, well, gone, it's flowered, obviously, before it goes to the seed, but I'm still stringing off bits of the rocket and just chopping off the seeds and saving a bit and chucking it to the chooks, and that I've underplanted a few bits and pieces that are that'll take off by the time that the rocket needs to be cut.
Yeah, back. Well, I garden like that too. I think I found a lettuce that had grown on its own, and I transplanted to a spot where it's allowed to grow on its own. I found at least a half a dozen fennels.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh,
so, and I mean, some recipes stupidly call for baby fennels. I'll be thinking to ourselves, when do you get baby fennels? Well, that's how you get them, because they keep popping up, and you allow them to grow, and you weed around them, and you mulch them, and you suddenly made a pet out of something that was wild. So I do that mostly. In most beds, you'll find that I've let something continue on, and I've not done the monocrop thing. You often see on TV gardening that it's nothing but the particular crop they're putting in, so it's an acre of potatoes or something. Well, in the home garden, I tend to be a bit gentler than that. I allow the geranium to grow. I allow the lemon balm, which has popped up on its own thing, to grow. I allow the garlic chives to grow. But as long as I can still get most of my crop in, I'm happy enough. But I don't think you can clear it all up and then
I mean, I've got my asparagus. Typical me, the things that other people find difficult to grow, I find easy, and the things that other people find easy to grow just die in my garden. But I'm cantankerous like that. But I've got chives that just, beautiful garlic chives are growing in amongst all my asparagus. Yeah, you know, I'm not quite sure where it came from. I don't know that it's necessarily the greatest companion plant, but like, wonderful. And marigold has gone berserk, and I'm sort of a bit like, oh gosh, you know. But in amongst all of that is the broccoli that I planted. Yep. So
I think that is, I've found from experience that that is the way to go, because when you get to the kitchen, you don't want 2 kilos of potatoes. You want a few potatoes there, and you want a few carrots there, and you want a few celery and onion there, and you want all these bits and pieces with just about every
I just want to recipe. Point out to the listeners that Trevor is clearly not Dutch, because us Dutch think 2 kilos of potatoes signifies a meal. So, you know... No, but I do agree. And my potatoes are growing really well. And you're right, you do want to be able to... My daughter-in-law, unfortunately, has got the flu this week, so she wanted vegetable soup, Mum! And then my son's like, no, chicken noodle soup. So, of course, I made one of each. But I just went out in the garden and just picked a whole variety of leftover greens. But it did make me think, wow, I better put some more stuff in for a bit further down the track when we're all kind of like a bit hot and tired.
I have managed to clear up land and plant things pretty much over the winter. Now, you plant strawberries over the winter, you plant celery and carrots over the winter, and peas. Now, I probably did an entire podcast on peas and beans.
Oh, I think you are a little fan of the peas. And I had, last year I had my COVID carrots, but I didn't plant my COVID carrots this year because I didn't work from home. I have a different job. But last year, working from home, I had the most wonderful carrot crop, because of course I was out there every hour. It was my excuse to quickly dampen those seeds.
Well, you do have to clear land constantly. You do have to plant it once you've cleared it, and that's what's happened with me. And I have these peas now that I'm really looking forward to, because part of the pleasure of gardening is foraging.
And I found I've got an old pot, just one of those old plastic black pots, and the dill, somehow dill seeds had gone in there, and it's gone mad. And so I'm like picking dill, and no, I love the foraging. I think that is the whole fun of it.
Well, I do think, yeah, you know, the whole fun of it really is the quality of your herbs. You can always get fresh herbs. I think we've said that, although I stick with that. I still think I got heaps of parsley, and it can be used like celery and stuff.
Yeah,
it can be
used
a number of ways.
Instead of lettuce in a salad, like put lettuce, but I've made parsley pesto. So pesto, a lot of people think pesto is just basil, which is the best one, by the way.
Mm.
But if you've got your rocket and you've got your parsley and all that is putting that together with nuts and garlic and olive oil, mix that all up, get your steamed veg that you foraged and kind of toss that through. Oh my God, bit of parmesan.
Well, I've been amazed just how good rosemary is. You pick a sprig of rosemary and that is a companion to tomatoes and potatoes.
Yeah, my rosemary's gone bananas. It's fantastic.
It is a good substitute. And
attracts bees as well, which is actually really, really important.
So what we're saying is that go back to where you started and start again. Cooking at home is very important. It's almost the same as gardening. Cooking and gardening are almost identical partners, really. I suggest that now is a good time to plant spuds. You can put spuds in.
Yep.
And they won't come through for a month or two, but you can mulch them. It is a good time, really, to plant all root crops, turnips, radish, carrots, beetroot, spinach. They can all be put in now. And because we're getting constant rain, of course, you haven't got that niggling terror of the summer. In Gawler, when you plant in summer, it is like it takes an hour for the topsoil to dry out, you know, if you're lucky. But currently, you can leave it for a day or two, and the little bits of rain you get in the cold weather is actually keeping the soil quite damp. So it is your best time. I mean, carrots are probably as important as any crop, even though they don't get much publicity.
Carrots are probably the one crop that I hadn't traditionally had success with, because you need to keep those initial seeds damp. But once they start growing, and I grew crops that were purple and orange and reddish sort of thing, and I had some white carrots, as I would.
What's that, red? Bloody Dutch.
And I used the tops. I would like harvest the tops and just kind of chuck them through soups and salad ingredients. The tops were really lovely. But, and people, you know, someone, it's a bit like potatoes and carrots. People will go, well, they're really cheap to buy. But growing your own, like my nieces were in the garden and they were eating. They were like ripping up the carrots. They were washing the carrots and they were eating the carrots, you know.
Oh,
and
very good.
My granddaughter's still probably a little bit little, and she certainly was last year, but we were like steaming it and mashing it, and she was just wolfing it down. And I would often have a meal of about 3 or 4 carrots. I'd just be standing there eating in the garden. Give those a go, and give some of those, I guess when you mentioned turnips, Trevor, I kind of think, oh, turnips. But in actual fact, give vegetables a go that traditionally might not taste good bought from the shop. Because someone said to me, no, parsnip. And I said, oh, I love most vegetables, but I'm not a fan of parsnip. But they said it's because you haven't had homegrown parsnip, and they were right. The parsnip that's homegrown is really sweet.
Yeah, but only if you get frost on it. So I've grown a parsnip here to enormous size. It tastes terrible. So you must go. I was in the Adelaide Hills for about 30 years, and we did actually grow our own apples, carrots and celery.
Yeah.
And I remember friends of ours came round, and we gave them carrot, celery and apple juice, which we've actually nominated as better than Drambuie. Because when you grow your own carrot, celery and apple, the drink that comes out of that, if you pick them and then juice it straight away, it is just a knockout. You know?
It's fabulous.
It's better than alcohol.
Trevor, now you're just getting ridiculous, right? Mm-hmm. No, truly though, it is. And what a beautiful way to start the day. And I guess that is the thing. Just keep on trying, because different gardens do different things at different times of the year. And I think it's really important that you do, if you really love tomatoes, give it a go a second time around.
Definitely. tomatoes, you have to keep going till you master them. The other thing that we have talked about over our podcast are the environmental, the good guys. We see ourselves as good guys.
We try. I try, Trevor.
And, I mean, one of the things you must try and do is to recycle. And you said earlier on that the grass and the failed crops can all be composted. So that is an excellent example of how nothing goes to waste in the garden. And I think you can take it further into your shed. I've successfully reused all of my milk cartons. I buy these 2-litre plastic milk cartons. They're quite handy, really, because all your tags, I've been putting tags on all my plants as I put them in with dates and names on them. And that's fairly important because you can, in fact, use them as a positioning so you don't forget where you planted them. But also they tell you dates and all, a whole lot of information. So they are good name tags. You and I both bought some native plants from that Salisbury nursery
We
had 100% success with them. But one of the reasons is that I didn't lose them in the grass because I had a milk carton which I cut the bottom off and I had that over the top of them and they grew out the top because I took the lid off. And that was quite a good little hothouse too, you know. And a location device is excellent. And there's a whole lot of uses, including dippers and little mini pots themselves. I mean, they're quite useful. And I would recommend that as part of gardening, you understand that you're recycling everything, you know. So I found that in the shed, you can use your old olive oil tins. You put labels on them and they can become storage compartments within a shed because they're all the same and they all look alike. Same thing goes for ice cream containers. So we actually spoke to a couple of people who had all their memorabilia in the garden.
Yes, Trish and Dave. And it was absolutely fantastic. And it certainly inspired me. And I think all that wonderful recycling stuff, even just getting a little bit creative about how you can create like little statues and bits and pieces with that recycling is absolutely wonderful. My neighbour found a old swing by the side of the road that, you know, she was walking, going on her morning walk, bless her, and she dragged one of those swings back that I've just hung over the back veranda to. At some point, somebody would have gotten annoyed and put that in landfill. Well, it is a fabulous little, like a kid's swing that, you know, my granddaughter can sit in while she we sit and we chat, we have our glass of wine and we garden. And I look at it and I think, you know, I could have gone down and bought it from the shop. I could have afforded one for $100, but it was so delightful to know that something's not going back into being landfill.
I think that's good for mental health too. I think the swing itself is a thing that you remember from children. That's probably good for your mental health. But also when you look at it, when you stand there and stare at it and you think, well, that was pretty clever of me to do it for no cost, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
And to not waste things. I think that is part of gardening. I think a lot of gardening is about mental health. I mean, I think sitting comfortably in the garden, having a drink, looking at the birds and bees, looking at the flowers, all of that is a major part, especially when so many people, I mean, there are millions of people in Australia now who are isolated at home and there's nothing to do. But there is, in fact, something to do, and that is just to sit and watch nature, because we probably need to do that more than we ever had before. I think we are getting to a crisis point in the environment. You know, I don't know how the hell Vancouver got to 47 degrees.
I know. And the thing is, too, that even people who are non-gardeners still absolutely love the concept of sitting in a garden. You know, I remember once saying to someone, they'd popped in to visit and they considered themselves a gardener. You know, well, they were a gardener, I shouldn't say that. And I said, well, let's sit out the back with a glass of wine. It was, you know, the evening. And she said, oh, I can't sit and watch where there's work to be done. And I said, what work to be done? And she said, look, you've got to weed that patch over there and you've got to do this. And I just said, well, I'm not looking at that. You know, I'm sort of looking at what looks great. When you're sitting and watching, don't look at what you've got to do. No, look at what you've done and enjoy it. Who cares if there's weeds,
you know? You probably get inspiration by that Australian pop band who saw it as an opportunity to define what is Australian. You know, they said lightning strikes over cane fields. Remember that one?
So
you can just contemplate abstract things like what's it to be Australian, because there'll be a couple of glass fly over pretty soon, you know.
Absolutely. You know, this morning it was drizzling and I could hear my ducks going berserk with happiness as it started raining. So my initial thought was, oh, it's drizzling, I can't go for my walk in the quilt I hung out this morning isn't going to dry. But then hearing the ducks, it was like this immediate shift in mental energy and mental headspace where I was like, oh, actually, I forgot. They get real happy when they're able to kind of go out and party, you know?
Well, one of the nicest things about gardening is water. I remember I had timers on all my irrigation, and so I kept missing the irrigation. I never arrived on time because it did it automatically when I'd programmed it to. But then when I got rid of the timers, one of the nicest things was seeing water in the garden. And that is very Australian because very Gawler, actually.
Yeah, very
because
Gawler.
It's very dry here. And when you can afford water, it is more or less like a luxury. And it is a wonderful thing because the birds agree with you on that one.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It's delightful. And if you are actually quite still in the garden, that's one thing I have noticed. If you're still in the garden, the birds don't immediately fly off when you come outside. They're quite used to, like, the New England honey eaters, and I get quite a lot of lorikeets in one of my trees. And I have noticed over the years, if I'm just really calm and just go out there quietly, they don't all take off anymore, which is really lovely.
Well, I've noticed magpies don't sweep me. They possibly pretend to, but they know that I'm the owner. That, you know, for the 20 years I've been here. And by the way, it's New Holland honey
eaters. It's New Holland. What did I call them? New England. Sorry, New Holland.
Of all people in America.
I thought New Holland. That's silly, actually. I know they're New Holland. That's silly. So definitely that mental health stuff. So if you haven't had any successes, get out there and try again. Focus on the fact that you did enjoy that idea of what your garden was going to look like.
And veggies are possibly hard. You might try trees or flowers next time. Mm. There's a heap of stuff that you just pop in and you'll have success somewhere along the line.
Absolutely.
And when you do, you build up around it, because if you've got a Virginia creeper climbing all over your wall, turning autumn colours in autumn like it ought to, you'll think, hey, I'm a success.
Look, if you've got a giant patch of stinging nettles, I want you to think to yourself, I have compost, I have tea, I have spinach.
And just by the by, sunflowers grow very easily.
Sunflowers grow very, very easily.
They look terrific.
They look very impressive.
So I think start anew. Start with the easy things. Start with what you like. And give it another go, because now is planting time.
It is. And on that, we will do a quick plug around the fact that we have got heirloom tomato seedlings again. So last year, our tomato seedlings to raise funds for the Gawler Broadcasting Association went spectacularly well. Trevor was amazing. He grew everything and I handed it out and made it look good. However, he grew everything. This year, what we are doing, so please have a look on the Facebook page as well, is what we're doing is something a little bit different. Is we're having a box of 5 heirloom tomato seedlings. So you buy the box for $20. In that, you get the 5 heirloom seedlings. So you will get an Amish paste, a Tigerella, which is those stripy ones, and they're a tall sort of bushy tomato. It does need a little bit of staking, but it produces a huge crop of medium-sized fruit, which is absolutely gorgeous. The kids love Tigerella because it's stripy.
Yeah, they like it, all right.
The Brandywine, which is a USA one, but it's named after an Amish creek, and it's an enormous size. It does need a trellis. You pick it pink, but it comes in red, orange, yellow, and black as well. It's great in sandwiches and salads, and they've got a bit of a non-acid taste. We'll give you all this information when you buy the plants. A Black Crim, which is bred on the Crimean Peninsula, and that's a climbing variety. It grows to about 1,800 millimetres
Currently,
high.
That one's doing best of all.
Yeah.
It's growing great guns. So.
That's a great one because it's got like a bit of a smoky flavour, so you can grill them and put them in stews and things like that.
Yeah, they're good on sandwiches. They're a dark purple one, so the colour itself is impressive.
And then they do, they look great in the garden. They make you look like a fabulous gardener. And then the one that everyone loves is I guess the Romas. The Roma ones, and they're like a bush variety, and I love a Roma. They're like a plum one, and they're actually just great to just chuck in your lunchbox and eat a little bit of salt.
Yeah, that's right. They've got less moisture than some of the others, and they are particularly good for drying out too, so you can keep them all winter long as semi-dried tomatoes. Roma are very popular. Last year I had a fair few Rouge de Maman left over because no one ever heard of them, no one wanted them.
I know, bizarre.
I put them in the ground and that was the bulk of my crop. I got heaps out of it. So.
And the thing is, with this box of heirloom, you know, the Amish paste is great for sauces and paste and things like that, and for freezing sort of thing, and that's a bottling one. And then you've got your Tigerella. Yep, that's That's great on a sandwich and the kids love it. Get your brandy wine. It's a bit of a different colour and it's like a non-acid taste, so that's sort of a little bit different to your normal tomato.
Very popular.
Yeah, I like that one. The black cream is just going fantastic. So K-R-I-M, and that's from the Crimean. And then you've got your Romas, which people are more familiar with. So a box of those will only set you back
$20. And $4 each. So that's
$4 each. It's fantastic. Organic. We've had a fabulous time actually planting them. They're heirloom.
Right.
And they will be available at the end of September and in October. Okay. So if you go on the Facebook page, we will have the ordering sheets there and we will get in contact with you. But we will also give you a sheet of the information on how best to grow them and suggestions of what they are used for. So if you don't grow anything else, grow the five different varieties of tomatoes, because I got to tell you, there is nothing more fabulous than the smell of a tomato.
Ripening.
Yeah, than the taste, that's true. And it's warm and it's ripening and you feel fabulous. And being able to give it to people is just gorgeous. Here, have some of my tomatoes.
Yeah, well, I think people are convinced. So many people grow tomatoes at home, it's not a joke. Because, I mean, they've unfortunately done the wrong thing in the supermarkets in that they've bred it for long shelf life and perfect looks. But the taste is the thing that chefs go for, and it's the thing that go for.
Absolutely.
So if you prepare the soil now, try a bit of poultry manure. They do like phosphate. So prepare the soil now, and we'll be coming your way at the end of September. So what are we going to do for next week? Have we thought about that at all?
Oh, God, next month, what are we going to do? September. Can we talk wisteria? Can we talk more flowers? I know, you're going to kill me, aren't you?
Well, flowers, wisteria. Well, I'm looking at you and I'm thinking, well, you should really be saying a children's garden. We haven't really discussed that yet, have we?
Actually, I'm going to put in an application for some garden beds at work. Let's talk about children and gardening. If you actually want to get kids to talk, garden next to them. Do things with them. Don't stare at a child and say, how was your day? Because they're going to go, if you're gardening, you're going to find out heaps. That's perfect. That's what we're doing next month.
Okay.
So I'll see you next month, Trevor.
And I'll see you then too, Michelle.
Okay, thank you. Bye.
Bye.